Welcome to episode 377 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
And this week, it's the week where I do the follow-up to our sort of state of the Microsoft Entertainment technology space from last week.
But before you do that, we have some feedback to go through.
We do. Just one really fast one. This was sent in to us at our inbox, which you can find at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. It was sent in by John. He says, regarding the discussion you had about watching Google Media in a family environment, he means on like multiple devices across your family, he says Google will soon be expanding their family plan to include movies and videos. Well, if you're plugged into the Android ecosystem, you know that this was sent quite a few days ago, because like a day after he sent this email, they officially announced it and unveiled it. So we're not really going to get into the details here, but yes, it's true. The Google Family Plan stuff is now available. You can share media across most different Android devices within your house. Apps and games are kind of up in the air. Some of them you can, some of them you can't. But it's a good start, and it sounds like, at least in terms of media, the things that we really care about here, that those are working and available already. So thank you, John, for the heads up, and we'll see how it goes. SolarSuite says it's not available there, which I presume there is Sweden. So that's it's unfortunate. I have to apologize that I don't normally think about whether or not these things are going to be available in other countries, but I guess that's probably just part of the problems with, you know, all of these different licensing agreements that they have to wrangle through various companies in various countries. So hopefully it'll make it there eventually.
And unfortunately, it's hard for us to get that information. A lot of the news stories about these types of things typically don't include information about availability outside the US if it's in a US media source.
Right. All right. So let's get into this Microsoft Entertainment Technology State of the Union, I guess.
Yeah, because I cut you off last week because it was just going to take like hours if you covered the whole spectrum. So when we left off, I think we had talked about video, and I forget what else you had talked about, but we still needed to cover like music and stuff like that.
Yeah, we had also covered TV, but tonight we're going to cover music and gaming and mobile, and then a wrap up. So let's start with music. And in terms of Microsoft and music, there's obviously been a lot of different ways, you know, different apps, different services over the years, rebranded services, and they're doing a better job of consolidating this stuff finally. And it's basically all about Groove Music now. Groove Music is an app. Groove Music is a service. Groove Music is a music subscription service. As an app, it's gotten so much better since it was initially launched as Groove Music. We've talked about Groove a lot over the years on this podcast. We don't really need to go into all of the details about what Groove is and what it isn't and what it has. But the important things are that it's a pretty mature app at this point. It doesn't have absolutely everything that some of the competitors have. But I think at this point, it's got at least the minimum to put it in that tier of apps that is worth considering using. And I think the thing that they're doing right with Groove Music is it's actually cross-platform. This isn't something that's just on Windows. It's on Windows 10, and it's really good on Windows 10. It's on Windows 10 mobile. It's on your Xbox, especially now we'll talk about that more later. But it's also on Android and iOS. I don't have any experience with it on iOS, but I do have experience with it now on Android. And I believe just last week or very recently, we talked about how they had finally updated the Groove Music app on Android and iOS, and it is significantly better now. I don't listen to music a ton on my phone, but just a few days ago I did, and I used Groove Music to do it, and it was nice. It worked out really, really well. So that's a really big deal, and it's not just that the app is available on all of these different platforms. The major features of the app are also available on the other platforms. So the two big things that I think fall into that are the fact that you can upload your entire music collection to OneDrive, and then it's just available anywhere that you can use Groove Music, including your Android phone. That's kind of a big deal. I mean, I think most of us remember the days of we had our giant MP3 collection on a PC somewhere, and then
this is not past tense for me, Josh.
Well, I think most of us, especially listening to this show, still have our collection of music on a PC somewhere. But before, where I was going with that is that if we wanted to take that with us, then we'd have to plug our device, whether it was a phone or a Zune or an iPod or something, physically connect it to our computer, choose which music we wanted to put on there because it wouldn't all fit. It was stupid. Now, we can all just store it in our own cloud. You know, it's not like it has to be shared with other people. I've got just my music up in OneDrive, just I can access it, and all of it is available to me through Groove Music on anything. And I think that's really good. Is it perfect? No, but it is darn good. I basically have no problems with it. I know some people have had a little bit of issues here and there, but that's going to happen with anything. So I think that's a solid feature. The other big one, of course, is the Groove Music service. This is a service that has actually been around far longer than the Groove naming. It started off as a Zune service, the Zune Music Pass. They've got their own music store. They've got a music subscription service where you pay $10 a month. You can listen to anything in their library. You can download it for offline listening to your devices. It's pretty much what you'd expect out of that style, you know, a Spotify style music service. There's a couple of problems with it though. Their library still isn't as big as Spotify's. That's the big reason why I don't use it. It doesn't have a lot of the European electronic music that I listen to. They just don't have it. And then the other problem, and I think this is a big one, they still don't have a family plan. A lot of their competitors, like Spotify, have family plans. Like $10 a month, it's not that bad to pay for music service. But if you have to pay $10 a month for every single person in your house, that adds up a lot, and most people aren't willing to do that. So Spotify solved this plan or problem. I believe iTunes Music has a family plan, right?
I think so.
So this is something that Microsoft needs to do. Like, if they're serious about keeping Groove Music service, Groove Music Pass, as a legit offering, this is something they need to figure out how to do. The other aspect of music, and we touched on this a little bit last week when we were talking about video, is that Microsoft doesn't really have a solution for competing with Sonos and Chromecast and AirPlay. They've got some open standards that they support in Miracast and DLNA, but they're not really viable solutions. Again, we touched on that last week, but that does really factor into this music thing. And it's something that we talked about a few months ago on the show, ranting about how, I think it was after Google launched their latest Chromecast devices, and they had the Chromecast Audio, and how Chromecast works really well. The Chromecast Audio is a cool thing. Sonos is cool. AirPlay is cool. And there just isn't really a great, really user-friendly solution for anybody who's just in the Microsoft ecosystem. Now, if you're in the Microsoft ecosystem, but on an Android phone or an iPhone, because that's absolutely doable at this point, then you do have some of those options. But if you're trying to use your Windows phone, if you still have one, or your Windows tablet, then some of those things just aren't as doable. Like you could do AirPlay, I guess, through iTunes running on a PC, maybe. Is that possible? I don't even know.
I think so.
I think so, but I don't know for sure. You could do Chromecast from the Chrome browser, I suppose. And Sonos does have a Windows desktop app, but you know, if you're trying to use this on a tablet and stuff, it's not exactly going to be an ideal user experience there either. So,
and it's worth mentioning also that Sonos has a Groove plugin as well. So you can use the Groove service and access your content that you have in your library and available through streaming all through Sonos if you already have Sonos in your house. You just can't stream to it easily.
Okay. That makes sense. So I guess that kind of ties up the music area. On to gaming. Gaming is kind of easy, but it's also kind of complicated. So there's, of course, it's a two-faceted thing. There's the Xbox. I would consider the Xbox as doing really well, at least in the United States, even though they're absolutely in a distant second place in terms of console sales behind the Sony PlayStation 4. I still know tons of people who have them. I know people who have multiple Xboxes, Xbox Ones at this point, myself included as of recently. It's a good console, and it does a lot of this stuff really, really well. Gaming, it does phenomenally well. It does all of this media stuff that we're talking about. The Xbox One S that we've talked about a lot expands on that with 4K and with HDR capabilities and an Ultra HD Blu-ray player. We talked about that a lot last week. It's doing really well. And while people like to focus on the sales numbers, I have a feeling that those console sales numbers, in terms of this being like a big race between Sony and Microsoft and to a lesser degree Nintendo, I don't think that those console sales numbers are going to matter as much as we go forward, because I think it's going to get blurrier. Because now it seems as though both of the big guys, Sony and Microsoft, are switching up their strategies. You know, before we always had these generations. You know, you had the Xbox and then the Xbox 360, and you had the PlayStation, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, and they all had a generation that lasted for 5-ish years. The previous generation went a little bit longer, went more like 8 years. We're kind of moving away from that. You know, there are some people that are kind of freaked out about this, and we talked about it a lot a couple of months ago as it started to look like this strategy was coming into play. It absolutely looks like the gaming console era is moving to be more similar to how Microsoft is releasing Windows now. Like, I'm not buying, you know, Windows 8 and then Windows 10 and then Windows 11 and then Windows 12. I'm on Windows 10. And then the next version of Windows 10, and then the next version of Windows 10 after that. And it's just Windows. And it seems like that's what they're doing with the Xbox One also. We've got.
Okay, but why does that mean that the console sales will matter less? It just means that they'll be spread across more devices.
Because it's not going to be some big race to win the generation, because the generation is probably going to last even longer than the last one, because there isn't going to be this clearly defined generation and then this big arms race to gear up for the next generation. It's just going to be, you're going to buy consoles and you're going to keep buying consoles, and there's going to be all of this backwards and forwards compatibility between them that it's going to matter less and less. And as those generation, as that concept goes away, and as they get longer and longer, people are going to be even, I think, even more likely to buy both offerings. Like, you're going to see even more people that have a PlayStation and an Xbox, because maybe they bought an Xbox One at launch and they didn't get a PlayStation, but then they see the Scorpio coming, but they think, it's still going to be an Xbox. And all of the Xbox games that come out after the Scorpio are still going to work on the Xbox One that I have. So it's been 3 or 4 years. Maybe now I'll buy a PlayStation and I'll buy whatever that one, whatever the current version of that is. And then a few years down the road from that, they'll buy the next Xbox One. And with them all being backwards compatible, assuming that Sony follows that same trend, then I just think that that matters less, and that the especially on the Microsoft side, with feature parity coming between the Xbox and Windows PCs, which is that other facet of Microsoft's gaming arm, that I just don't think that stuff is going to matter as much.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree. I think there's always going to be a line in the sand between what Sony's doing, what Microsoft is doing, and what Nintendo is doing. And I think that whether it's spread across multiple consoles or whether it's by generation, the industry is still going to compare them, even if they're not comparing themselves. And I also don't know that I agree with your theory that people are suddenly going to buy consoles more frequently simply because the generations aren't as important. It still costs $300 to buy this thing at the lowest end, so it's not as if they're getting significantly cheaper. And a lot of people didn't buy the Xbox One because it was expensive, but people also didn't buy it because the 360 still works pretty darn well.
But in terms of gamers, like actual core gamers, they do just buy these things and they keep buying these. You know, there are a lot of people who bought an Xbox One when it came out, and then a year and a half later, the Xbox One Elite came out. So they bought that. And then the Xbox One S came out and they bought that. I mean, people do this. They just buy more and more of them. They've got multiple TVs in their house. There's a new version of it. It may not be drastically different, but it's a new one, and I've got another TV. Let's buy another one. People do the same thing with the PlayStations, and people definitely do that with the Nintendo products. They'll buy a Nintendo DS, and then the DS Lite comes out, so they buy that. And then a year later, they release a slightly bigger DS, and so they buy that too. And gamers just keep doing that. It's their hobby, so they keep buying more of them.
I guess since I've, you know, met my Xbox to TV ratio, I just don't see that I would be going to buy every new box that comes out. You know, even I decided after being kind of enamored by the S announcement that it makes more sense to wait for Scorpio. But it still bugs me that that's within like 4 years of me plunking down $500 for the Xbox One.
Well, but you also don't fall into that core gamer demographic.
That's true. Yep.
So I guess we'll see. But I think really a big part of this is that Windows side, because like I always look at the way that the industry treats Microsoft and PC gaming, because they treat them like, well, PC gaming is awesome and we love PC gaming, but boo Microsoft. But 95% of PC gamers are playing PC games on Windows. And over half of PC gamers now are gaming on Windows 10 PCs. We know that now because most PC gamers are using Steam, and Steam releases their OS share numbers. And now I think they said it's over half. It's a huge percentage is now on Windows 10, because if you're on Windows, why wouldn't you be on Windows 10 at this point? So there's that whole aspect of Windows has been where you do PC gaming, but now Microsoft is bringing all of this Xbox functionality straight into Windows. We've got the Xbox app, which on its own is bringing all of these great features and functionality. You've got party chat across PC and Xbox. You've got achievements. You've got the game DVR stuff. You know, they've recently updated the Xbox app on the Windows side so that you can even more easily and kind of more powerfully edit your Xbox game DVR recordings on a PC and share them more easily from a PC. So that's gotten way more powerful. And then, of course, there's the fact that now Microsoft has a legit store for selling games cross-platform and selling them in a way that you can buy them once and play them on PC and Xbox. They're calling that Xbox Play Anywhere. We've talked about it in the past. It's rolling out very soon. Within the next month, we're going to see Xbox Play Anywhere titles releasing, and you're going to be able to play them on anything. I mean, assuming that your PC is capable of playing the games, which not everybody has a gaming PC, but it's there. And it's really neat to see where it's going. And I'm curious to see, like, I'm really excited to see what this does with the PC gaming industry as we see the Play Anywhere stuff work and as we start to see more cross-platform multiplayer really start to happen. Now, it's not going to happen in certain categories. You're not going to play first-person shooters cross-platform, but there's plenty of opportunities there for lots of other game types to play cross-platform. And Xbox really has, and through Microsoft, really has everything in place to make that work so, so well. Like, I genuinely feel that the main reason that Xbox has been so successful and continue to be a thing where other competitors have come in the past and not lasted, the big thing that has kept Xbox around, it's Xbox Live. Xbox Live came out in the latter half of the original Xbox generation, and it was unlike anything that the other guys were doing. Sony didn't really have a great online sort of system built up yet, and Nintendo still can't figure out online gaming in 2016, but Microsoft did, because Microsoft understands networking and internet stuff. You know, they've got Azure, they've got all of the technical know-how to make this sort of ecosystem work, and it's been so, so good. And it's to see it coming across to the Windows side, I think opens up lots of really, really awesome possibilities to finally really start bridging those gaps between console gamers and PC gamers in a lot of really, really great ways. So I think the gaming side of all of this discussion is one of the most exciting areas, if not the most exciting area going forward.
Cool.
The last area to hit on is, of course, mobile. And while I've been extremely excited about the gaming side, the mobile side, in terms of consumer focus and entertainment technology, it's dead. It's dead. Like, from a consumer focus and an entertainment focus, why would you recommend to anybody to get a Windows 10 mobile device at this point?
And when you say that, do you also mean tablets?
I don't really, because I Windows 10 tablets are, they're PCs. It's not like Android, where you pick up an Android tablet and it's just a big phone. With Windows tablets, instead of being a big Windows phone, it's a small PC. And that's kind of good and kind of bad. Like, it's good from the things that Windows does well sense, meaning productivity and things like that. But it's not great. It's not as great from an entertainment sense, because especially in terms of gaming, it's just not all there. Now, in some ways, it's still pretty good, because they do have a lot of the media apps that you want. You know, you've got Groove Music, of course. That's good. You've got the Xbox video app, if you want to use that. But we mentioned last week that ecosystem isn't great, isn't where it could be compared to some of the other video ecosystems. But you've also got a lot of the third-party apps. You've got Plex, you've got Hulu and Netflix and those types of apps on there. So it's good in that sense. But in terms of tablets, that's a harder case to make if you're looking for an entertainment device.
Right.
So no, I'm just talking phone here when I say mobile here. And yeah, I really just don't, I don't see anybody really being able to make a really strong argument for Windows 10 mobile is the place to be if you're a consumer and you care about entertainment technology. It's just not there, unfortunately. And most of that is because Microsoft isn't there anymore. Their focus is not on consumers when it comes to Windows 10 Mobile. They've said time and time again that the focus is now enterprise. So someone like me who is not an enterprise tech guy, they're not targeting me anymore. So I don't need that device, and I've moved on. Which really takes us to the big question that led into all of this. And that was, if you're a Microsoft guy, a Microsoft person who's been entrenched in all of this, how does Android work for all of this? And the answer is fairly well, because Microsoft is there and Microsoft has been on Android for a while. You know, what I should have done is counted. I should have opened up the Play Store before the show and counted how many Microsoft apps are in the Play Store. I think it's around 100. It's a ton. Microsoft is all over the Android place. And a lot of the important stuff that they have is there. We talked earlier, Groove Music is there. The recent update made it way, way better. It's there. It's absolutely worth using, especially if you've already got your music up in OneDrive. It's got OneDrive. It doesn't have the Xbox video app. So there's that. But again, we've talked about that not being the greatest ecosystem anyway. It does have an Xbox app, so you can do some of the Xbox stuff, including TV streaming to an Android device if you have a TV tuner on your Xbox One. But frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if that eventually goes away, because I really don't see Microsoft focusing on the TV functionality aspect of the Xbox One going forward, as we talked about a ton last week. The only big feature that the Xbox doesn't have on Android that it does have on the Windows PC side is game streaming, which I think would be kind of nice to see, especially for Android tablets or even some of these more Android portable gaming focused devices. Like there's an NVIDIA Shield device that's basically, you know, it looks sort of like a Game Boy or something like that. That's basically just a phone screen with a controller attached to it, a controller that looks like an Xbox controller. And if I could use that to stream Xbox games to it and then just comfortably game on my couch or in bed or whatever, that would be kind of awesome. So kind of hoping they do that eventually. That covers most of the media stuff. For everything else that you might have been using on Windows Phone, a lot of it's there. Outlook is there, but frankly, I'm not a big fan of this Outlook app that they've made for Android. No, I really don't like it much.
I love the one for iOS.
And I think they're similar. I hate the way it handles calendar, appointment, emails, and stuff like that. I always find it impossible to tell what exactly the appointment email is trying to tell me. Fortunately, I only use it for work. That app single-handedly switched me, got me to change from using Outlook.com to just going back and using Gmail. I dislike the app that much. OneNote is there. I use OneNote a lot. It's a good app on Android. OneDrive is there, including the ability to automatically back up all of your photos to OneDrive. It's there. It works really well. Office Lens is there. I really like that app for scanning documents, taking whiteboard photos. It's got some limitations that the Windows Phone app didn't have. Like if you're scanning documents, you can only scan one page and that's it, which is kind of dumb. And they've got Office. I don't really use Office on mobile much, but it's there. I honestly don't even know if you have to have do you have to have Office 365 to use those apps?
I think the way they design them is that you don't have to, as long as the device is like under 9 inches or something like that.
Okay. So on an Android phone, I would be able to do all I want in the Office.
You should be able to.
Okay. So I guess that kind of wraps up this big conversation. So, I mean, heck, we're already about a half hour into the show and that was just half of the conversation. So now everyone sees why you cut me off last week. I think we're overall in a pretty good spot here in terms of being Microsoft fans who like our entertainment technology. There's some downsides here and there, but overall, I think this, we're in a good spot and the trajectory is going up. You agree?
I agree. And I think you've done a good job of proving that you haven't abandoned the Microsoft world just because you picked up an Android phone.
Not even a little bit. Nope. Thank you for pointing that out.
All right. Well, let's actually get to some of our news. And while things are still going up, we don't really have anything new going on specific to audio and video. A lot going on with gaming and, of course, a bunch of release stuff that we're going to end up talking about. So, Josh, this is you again, because as far as gaming goes, I have not had a chance to turn on my Xbox since the new update came.
Okay, well, you know, we're actually recording this on August 2nd, the big day of the Windows 10 anniversary update. This is the day that I expected all of our Xboxes to be getting an update, but surprise, it happens Saturday. I don't know why in the world they would want to release something like that on a Saturday and put all of their support people, you know, on the hook on a weekend to support a rollout like that. But they did.
Seriously.
And so by the time you're hearing this, if you've got an Xbox One, it undoubtedly has the latest update on it. Now, what can you expect? Again, we're not going to dive into all of this in depth because we've covered so much of it in the past, but there's really four main things we want to hit on. The first one is background music. It's kind of a big deal. Lots of people have made a big deal out of it. It's finally here. It's only supported, though, through some apps. It's only supported through UWP apps. Now, fortunately, yeah, they've given us some new UWP apps. Like, they've finally replaced the horrible version of Groove Music and replaced it with the Windows UWP version. It's so much better. It works just like it does on a PC. And when you start listening to a song or anything through Groove Music, it just automatically becomes background audio. And by that, I mean, if you leave the app, it keeps playing. If you open a game, it keeps playing. And there's some things that are good about this. There are some things that still need work. On the good side, if you double tap your Xbox button, which would bring up that menu on the left, normally it would start at the top where Friends is, but instead it now starts at the bottom. And instead of the bottom section of that menu being labeled Snap, it's now labeled Multitasking. And it's called that because it does Snap and controls for background audio. So if you're just looking to adjust the volume, pause a song, skip tracks, you can get there really, really fast by just double tapping the Xbox button and it takes you right there. So they've done that really, really well, but it's still not quite as good as it was when it was on the Xbox 360. Some things that it doesn't do, well, if you're playing a game that has background music, it doesn't turn it off. On the Xbox 360, it did. Now, most games, this is annoying, but most games do give you in the settings options to adjust volume settings on different things. And you could manually go in there and turn off the game's background music. Another thing, I haven't gotten to play with this enough yet to really try this out, but I've read from other people. Apparently on the 360, if you were listening to background music and you were playing a game and like the game went into like a cutscene video, apparently on the 360, it would pause your background music so that you could really focus on that cutscene video and hear what was going on. Well, it doesn't do that right now on the Xbox One. So your music is going to be playing over top of that video too. So it's not perfect yet, but it's at least there. And there are some good things that they've thought about in terms of how to actually use it. So I fully expect them to continue to work on that feature and to make it better and to make it at least as good as it was on the Xbox 360 eventually. The other big feature is, of course, Cortana. It's now here. It's apparently gotten a lot of work throughout the preview process. I don't really know. It isn't something I've gotten to spend a lot of time with. I mentioned before, they eventually gave us the ability to turn off Cortana and go back to the original Xbox voice commands. That's what I did in my house because my family could not stand how bad the Cortana experience was with the initial preview releases. I'm going to turn it back on, though. And my family's going to let me know how good it is now. It's supposed to be way, way better. We'll see. Another complaint that a lot of people have had, myself included, is that having to say, hey, Cortana, before everything, it's a lot longer than saying Xbox. And people have been asking, can we change the key phrase? And Microsoft is listening. They haven't said they're definitely going to do it, but they are looking into it. So maybe they'll let you say whatever you want. Maybe they'll just make it be, maybe just give you the option between Cortana and Xbox. I think that would be enough. So hopefully they'll be addressing that too. Again, this is a team that's constantly listening to feedback and making adjustments.
I really don't understand why they didn't just keep it as Xbox. Because, I mean, if you have your phone or your tablet or your computer sitting right there on your lap while you're watching TV, and I think we talked about this before, yep, that could really be problematic. Why would you have the same name? That doesn't make any sense to me. Change the functionality, drive it with Cortana, but have the call word still be Xbox. I just don't get why they had to change this.
I think it's just about marketing and getting that like it is a common experience and they want everything about it to feel common and familiar. And if you're used to using Cortana on your PC, they want it to be as similar as possible to that. And I understand that, but I don't think it works out as well in practice. They've also updated the games collection section, games and apps and how it shows updates and all that stuff. It's way better. It gives you a lot more customizability over how you're viewing your list of games and all of that. So that's really nice. And then the other big one is the Windows and Xbox stores have now actually combined. It is one store. You've got a slightly different Xbox store interface on your console. It's better. It's definitely better than it used to be. It's still not perfect. They've fixed some annoyances, like you're not going to see when a new game comes out and there's like four different versions of it. You're not going to have four different box arts in a row of icons that only holds eight when four of them are for one game and then the other four are for different games. They've fixed that.
Good.
And there's been lots of other smaller fixes too. And then of course that means UWPs. They're coming. Some of them are here now. Pandora's here. Groove is here. The Netflix app has been updated. I don't think Amazon has been yet, but it's probably going to be. Not everything is available yet, though. I mean, we were speculating last week about how this is going to work, if everything's going to be available or not. We don't know for sure yet. Not everything is available yet. And they're going to be releasing information for developers later this month on how exactly developers are going to get their apps into the store and then how that's going to impact the users.
I know how it's going to impact the users. We're going to get fart apps. Lots and lots of fart apps.
I don't think so.
I think so. You know, there's already an Echo fart app. Isn't that awesome?
No, but
I mean, I just, the whole thing, I don't know, I am not optimistic about this. I am cautiously pessimistic.
We'll see. I couldn't get a clear answer from Microsoft when I talked to them at Build about how this was going to work. It certainly could be opening the floodgates to anything and everything, but I don't know. I'm just going to wait and see because I don't think we're going to have to wait long to see. So anyway, that's it. That's the anniversary update on the Xbox One. You've got it. Go and play with it. Tell us what you like, what you don't like. And most importantly, don't just tell us. Go over to the Xbox user voice page and tell Microsoft what it is you like and don't like and what you'd like to see because they listen.
Hopefully, I'll get a chance to play with that in the next couple days.
Hey, now that you're home, you might be able to.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, today is also the day that the Xbox One S launched. This is only the 2 terabyte version is available today. Reviews are coming out. Most of the reviews have been pretty positive. Kind of expected that. I mean, it's basically just a better version of the Xbox One that we already have. One thing that I did see today that I thought was worth pointing out is that power consumption numbers that Microsoft didn't really talk about whether or not it would use less power. Good news. It does. On the current Xbox One, if you're just watching TV with an Xbox One, it's using about 78 watts of power, which is a lot. Now with the Xbox One S, it only uses about 30 watts of power while you're watching TV. Gaming on the original Xbox One, 110 watts while you're gaming. Now about 50. I mean, that's, these numbers are half what they were before.
Right.
Which is pretty awesome. If you've got your Xbox One in instant on mode, it's been slammed a lot is if you leave your Xbox One in instant on mode, it's sucking all of this power. Well, it's sucking 10 watts of power. That's not a ton. It's some, but it's not that much. The Xbox One S in instant on mode, still about the same. It's still about 10 watts of power. So that's good news to see. I also saw a little bit of information about how it turns out that the GPU in the Xbox One S is actually a little bit faster than the GPU in the current Xbox One. And in some games, it makes a difference. And in some games, it doesn't make any difference. But we're talking 5 to 10 frames per second on some games in some scenarios. So that's cool, but it wasn't a significant enough bump and a consistent enough bump across the library for them to push that as a selling feature. So I think it's good that they didn't push that because you know there are lots of games where they just cap the frame rate at 30 frames per second. And if that's the case, it doesn't run any faster because it's already capped. So a faster GPU isn't going to help you there. But in cases where they're not, it is helping some. So if you're buying an Xbox One S, cool. You get a little bit of a performance bump and it uses less power. So that's always nice to see. All right, let's just real quick hit on the deals in Games with Gold. The deals this week, after a few weeks of kind of bad offering, not too bad this week. All of the following games you can get at half off right now. Doom, that game just came out a couple months ago, half off. Fallout 4, Rainbow Six Siege, which maybe you played last weekend because it was free last weekend, and that is a fun game. And all of those are available this week for $30. So that's a pretty good price on all of those. So check them out. And then we mentioned this last week, but now that it is August, now that you can actually get these games for free, wanted to remind you, go to the store, pick up Warriors Orochi 3 Ultimate on Xbox One. It's a big, huge action game where you're basically fighting 20 dudes at once all the time. It looks crazy and kind of cool. And then on the Xbox 360 side, Spelunky, much-loved game from the previous generation, and of course, is backwards compatible, so you can play them both on your Xbox One for free right now.
And remember, you still also have access to Tumblestone on the Xbox One, which became available for the latter half of July and first half of August.
When are they going to get this straight?
I will never understand why they do it that way.
Nope, doesn't make any sense. Fix it, Microsoft, fix it. Make this easier on us. All right, that's it for gaming. Shall we move on to some mobile news?
Let's move on to something in the mobile space, something I was very excited about when I saw it at CES, and then we talked about it when there was an unexpected campaign to crowdfund the launch of the Nuance Neo in the United States. This is a Windows phone that I liked a lot. It's a mid-range phone. It has this modular back thing going on. It's available in Japan. And it looks like it's never going to be available in the United States.
Boo. It was a really pretty phone.
It is. It is. It is, on a trajectory to get about maybe 150 of the 725K that they needed.
Yeah, that's definitely not going to happen in, just a few days left to go. So That's unfortunate. It really was one of the most intriguing Windows phones to be shown in the last few years, frankly. Probably the most interesting phone, perhaps since the 1020. And we're not going to get it here in the United States.
Well, their timing was really kind of terrible. And right. By no fault of their own, really. I mean, they came out with this at the start of the year or end of last year, I guess. And when we saw it at CES, Windows 10 looked like it was going to be the savior of Windows Phone. At least that's the way Microsoft was telling the story. And what I suspect happened was when Microsoft changed the story and decided to focus on enterprise, that the folks at Nuance decided, hey, you know what? Before we actually make this thing, we should see if there's going to be any demand for it at all. And this was probably a pretty good way of doing that.
Yeah, pretty smart idea by the Nuance folks. And just unfortunate for the timing. All right, so we've been talking a bunch about this Windows 10 anniversary update. Today's the day. It's on your PCs. It's on your Xbox One. It's also an update for Windows 10 Mobile.
But not yet.
But not exactly yet. Yeah, I mean, mobile OS updates are always kind of a mess to roll out. So I'll absolutely give them a break on that. The bigger story, perhaps, is, you know, perhaps you've just been running Windows 10 Mobile on an older phone that you have, because if you wanted to run it on a newer phone, your options were the 950 and the 950 and the pretty much just the 950. So you're probably running Windows 10 as an insider preview build on an older phone. And depending on how old that phone is, you might have to kiss the Windows Insider Preview program goodbye. Because if your phone is not supported, you won't get any more builds past 10586. None. No fast ring, no slow ring, no release preview, nothing. You're not getting any more builds. And it's worse than that. If you use the device recovery tool to flash your phone back to Windows Phone 8.1, you won't be able to get Windows 10 Mobile back on it. So if you've got an unsupported phone and you like having Windows 10 Mobile on it, don't mess with it, because you won't be able to get it back on there. Now, most of the sites that I read were pretty lazy and didn't really talk about, well, what's an unsupported phone and what isn't. It didn't take long for me to find the list. Basically, if you've got any of the Lumias that are in the 30 series, 40 series, or 50 series, they're supported. And by that numbering, I mean like the 630, the 930, the 640, the 730, the 650, the 950, all of those phones, they're still supported. And you're still going to be able to get insider preview builds on them. You're also going to be able to continue to get preview builds on the Icon and the 1520 and a few other phones that nobody has, like the phones from Blue and things like that. So if you're running a 1020 or a 920 or an anything else 20, except for the 1520, you're not going to be able to run.
Forget about it.
Right. Yeah. You're done.
If you have a 10, you're right out.
Exactly. All right. And then, of course, finally, today is the day for the Windows 10 anniversary update on PCs. It's rolling out all over the place. Some of you may already have it. Some of you may not. Some of you may be thinking, oh, so that means I can update my Windows 8 PC to Windows 10 anniversary for free. Nope, you can't. You missed the free updates. That ended July 29th. They weren't joking. It's not available as a free update anymore. If you weren't already on Windows 10, if you were, there you go. You've got the Windows 10 anniversary update. Lots of features that we've talked about ad nauseum in the past, inking and Cortana improvements and all this stuff we've talked about over and over again over the past, I don't know, 6-8 months that we've been using it on various PCs. It's good. Go and get it. It's been very, very stable over the last month or so of preview builds. I would not be hesitant at all to recommend that you go out and just do this update. If you've got a Windows 10 PC and it's pretty stable, do the update. You might want to do backup first. That's never a bad idea. I'm not sure that I'm going to, but yeah, so just go and do that. It's going to be worth it. You're going to like it. And this is the new reality that we're living in. You just get your new versions of Windows as they come out as probably semi-annual updates. So go and do it.
So here's the thing that I don't understand. The anniversary update got so much tech press attention. And certainly through the Insider program, we've been talking about it for a long, long time. If you go to Microsoft's site today, nothing on the homepage. If you go to the Windows homepage, nothing about this update. The only place that I was able to find information about this update was on the Windows blog on Microsoft. I don't get it. It's like they aren't promoting this now publicly on the launch day. I just don't get that at all. In fact, I read quite a bit of posts saying that people weren't seeing the update. How do I get the update? So we're actually going to have a link to how you can get the update in case that's still a question for some by the time we publish the show.
Spoilers, go to Windows Update on your PC and click check for updates.
Yeah, it's just weird though, considering how heavily they pushed Windows 10 to the point of people suing them that now they have an update available and people are like, well, where is it?
You're right. That is weird. I didn't check the Microsoft homepage until you mentioned it. And you're right. You know, August 2nd is almost over and the Microsoft homepage doesn't mention it at all.
I don't get it.
That is weird. Fortunately, our listeners know. So, hey, go and do it. One other Microsoft thing that I wanted to share with our listeners that I discovered. If you're a Bing Rewards person, which I know people laugh at us for using Bing, but it's good. It is good. And you get points for it. I've never really used those Bing Rewards points for anything. So I had a bunch of them building up. I had over 6,000 reward points from Bing. And normally you can use these on like gift cards to Amazon and Starbucks and GameStop and stuff like that. And normally if you want a $5 gift card to something, it's going to cost you about 500 points. Well, right now through the 15th of August, they're doing a deal where for only 325 points, you can get a $5 gift card to the Windows Store, which also works in the Xbox Store. Or you can double it and spend 650 points on a $10 gift card. And so you can use this on apps, on games on your Xbox, on music to play in Groove Music. You can use this on all sorts of stuff. And so I had all these points. I turned them into $60 worth of cards.
That's awesome.
I'm going to buy Forza Horizon for free because I use Bing. That's kind of awesome. So
that's pretty cool.
If you're a Bing user, go to the rewards section. We'll have a link straight to this offer, but you're going to want to hit this because it's a pretty awesome deal.
All right. And that is it for Microsoft news. So a couple industry news pieces that we wanted to touch on. The first is related to something that we didn't even really talk about on this show. About a month ago, the folks at HD Home Run were promoting, or Silicon Dust is the name of the company, but HD Home Run is the brand, and they were promoting that new Samsung TVs that were available actually allowed the use of the HD Home Run UI that can run remotely through DLNA. And this is not the thing that you see if you just go to the DLNA settings on your TV and go and select the tuner, and then you go and you find the channel. This is an actual like DVR-like TV caliber UI for your television, direct line into the HD Home Run tuners.
Yeah, I mean, it's an HD Home Run app on your TV, just built into the TV. Like your Netflix app and things like that, which is cool. So that launched July 1st on most of the Sony TVs that support RUI. That was July 1st.
Which means, just because I learned this, I didn't know this, remote UI That's a thing.
Exactly what you would expect it to mean, unfortunately. So that was July 1st. Silicon Dust was pretty excited about it because it's cool. We didn't really mention it here because it's not super Microsofty, but it is cool. Well, then Samsung did an automatic firmware update on people's TVs starting around July 27th, and it broke this. The feature didn't even get to live for a month. So I what we want to share with our listeners is, if you're a HD Home Run user and you've got one of these TVs, maybe you didn't know that this feature was even there, but if you didn't have your TV set up to do automatic firmware updates and you're interested in this, don't do a firmware update because it's going to break it. And there's been no news that I've seen from Samsung saying that they're going to fix this.
Yeah, I've seen no follow-up on this, and that's just infuriating. I know that Silicon Dust is trying to find out from Samsung what the intent was, if this was just an accident or if they intentionally disabled the ability to support remote user interfaces, but I would seriously doubt that that's the case, because Samsung, even as far back as like 2011, was promoting the fact that their TVs were eventually going to be able to support remote user interface capabilities. And they were doing this in partnership with DirecTV at the time.
Right.
Now, we know that a lot of stuff that we hear about in press announcements from these big companies, some of it comes to be, some of it doesn't come to be. This obviously took years to actually happen, but the capability that it enabled was just phenomenal, because it actually allowed you to select the HD Home Run just as if you were selecting HDMI 1 or HDMI 2 or coax. One of the other options was HD Home Run, and it just worked. So I really hope that this is just a screw up on Samsung's part, and they didn't just blindly and arbitrarily turn this off without communicating their intent.
Yep. All right, we got one more industry story here before we get out of here.
We do indeed, and I won't spend too much time on this, but we've talked a little bit about the FCC's proposal and what they're trying to get the cable and satellite industry to do in terms of supporting open access to content and metadata. One of the requests that the FCC had was that that access also support DVR functionality, like the ability to rewind and pause and things like that. The cable industry has basically come back with additional information on their counter proposal, which was ditch the box, meaning, oh, we'll just write HTML apps and, you know, we won't do everything else that you said. And what they've clarified is that, oh, yeah, and that DVR thing you asked for, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Well, do you blame them? Like, that is kind of their big thing, right? And we know that because it's the thing that we all want.
Yeah.
So it's their leverage. It's their leverage. It's their bargaining chip, right?
I don't know if it's that or not. I mean, it's funny. On Cord Killers last week, they were talking about how really this doesn't matter because DVRs are a thing of the past, despite all of the numbers. Right? So we know that DVRs are important to a great many number of households. We also know that the ability to access and record and pause and playback content is something that is becoming more and more common, not just in DVR functionality, but in all kinds of streaming services. So it's something that people are expecting. And I'm frustrated if we're going to end up with one of these situations like Sling TV, where sometimes you can pause and sometimes you can't, and sometimes you can record and sometimes you can't, because that's just a big old mess. And if that's an example that the industry thinks they are going to follow, then I think this is going to fail miserably. So this is just, again, I'm kind of ranting, and this is a topic that is very important to me. I like where the FCC was going on this. Tom Wheeler had very good ideas about how consumers expect to get content in the future, and the NCTA just isn't having it.
Yeah, so we'll of course continue to follow the situation and see where we actually end up. But this stuff, it's the government, guys. It takes a while. And even once they've made a decision, it's going to be a while before this stuff gets implemented.
Absolutely.
We're talking at least some point next year.
No, we're talking way, way, way past that, right? Because if it gets adopted, it could very well take years to get anything out as a solution. You know, think about how long it took to actually execute cable card.
Sure, but like if they were to go the, okay, we'll let you just do your apps route. Most of them already have apps. So that they might say, all right, since we've let you have it your way, you got to do it fast. That's a possibility.
Yeah,
that's unlikely, but it's a possibility. And the deadline probably wouldn't be for a couple of years, but we would start seeing some of that stuff prior to that, I would think, probably.
Yeah.
Hopefully. All right. So that's it for our news this week. Richard, what have you been watching?
A lot of the usual stuff. I've been keeping up with Big Brother, catching up on Hawaii 5-0, keeping up with Tyrant, which I'm really enjoying. Every season has been very different. This one continues to be, and I like it a lot. I have started season 3 of Justified. I've started season 5 of Eureka. And I started season 2 of Sports Night, which means that I binged the entire first season of Sports Night in about a week and a half. But I really enjoyed it. And one final thing I forgot to even put in the list here. Over the weekend, we decided to watch the pilot episode of Colony. And I don't know if you've heard anything about this.
No, what is Colony?
It's a USA series that stars Josh, somebody whose name I can't remember, who played a character in Lost. And he is married to the woman who was in Prison Break. And I don't remember her name either. But people who watch those shows probably know who I'm talking about. And they basically live in a post-attack, or actually the way that it's put is they lived in a post-invasion world, and the situation that the planet presumably finds itself in, trying to live in a world after an invasion. At least that's what we're led to believe. We don't have a whole lot of information. Is it actually aliens? Is it not? Is it actually something from the planet? But in some way, someone has kind of taken control and created a society of fear. And how are people living within that? It's interesting. I liked it. I don't know if Edward's going to keep watching it, but I liked it a lot. And yes, thank you. It was Josh Holloway. Thank you, Anthony, in the chat.
Cool. All right.
So how about you?
Not a lot of time, but enough time for Mr. Robot. And I'm actually gonna give you a double header of Mr. Robot, because Joel sent me a message on Twitter and said, "Have you been listening to Decrypted, the Ars Technica Mr. Robot podcast?" And I said, "No, I didn't know that this was a thing." And he said, "You need to check it out." And I said, "I will." And I did. And it's really good. It's really, really cool. It's Ars Technica. It's not just a couple of schlubs in their home offices.
Hey, wait.
I didn't mean to compare them to us in any way. So this is good. This is really good. They've had like, it's basically they do a show every week, and it's not your typical TV show fan podcast where they just recap it and gush all over it. Instead, they give a little bit of a recap and what they think it means and where it's going and stuff like that. But then they also do something else. So like a couple weeks ago, they had a guy on who used to do cybersecurity for the FBI, is still a consultant to the FBI, and is a consultant to the show, to Mr. Robot. and nice. Was able to give a bunch of insight into how it is that they're so good at making the computer parts of the show so realistic and so authentic. And he's a big reason why they are. Just this last week, they had Andy Greenwald on, who's the guy that hosts Hacking Robot, the after show. I didn't like Hacking Robot. I liked Andy Greenwald's appearance on this podcast, so I guess there's that. It's been really, really good. It's not super long. Definitely check it out. It's called Decrypted. We'll have a link to it, but it's a podcast. Just go to iTunes or wherever it is that you get your podcast and do a search for Decrypted. You won't regret it if you are a Mr. Robot fan. On the gaming side, not a ton, but this last weekend, there was a beta for NHL 17. You all know I'm a huge hockey fan. Wanted to check this out because it looked like they were doing a lot of new stuff. I really, really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. So I think I'm going to get NHL 17. And normally I would wait until the price drops, but I'm really, really excited about NHL 17 and might buy it even sooner this year. So if you're into hockey, might want to be checking that out. I don't normally recommend buying these annual sports games every year because they don't normally change that much, but maybe you're like me and you took NHL 16 off, and I think NHL 17 is going to be a good place to pick up the series if you did. So check that out if you're into hockey. But that's it for me. Nice light week in terms of what I've been watching. I really want to get back to Homeland. That's what I want to be watching in addition to Mr. Robot. So hopefully between now and next week, I will. I did want to go and see Jason Bourne last weekend. And even after I saw the reviews, I still want to see it. We weren't able to make that happen because we need a babysitter to make that happen. It's not going to happen this weekend, but maybe soon. I would definitely still like to see that. And that's pretty much it for me. So that means it's pretty much it for this show. If you'd like to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website's at DigiMediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're on Google+. We've got an email address. It's entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. If you want to listen to more things from us, you can also listen to Richard's other podcast. It's called Home On. Richard, what's going on with Home On?
So we've already had a lot of really good feedback on the episode that I did with my friend Anthony, talking about what he needs to think about in his new home. And it's funny, I forget, since we get so deep into the details of what's new and what's going on in the space and what companies' products are we featuring, that a lot of people are just coming into this and they're saying, where do I start? So this turned out to be a good episode that apparently a lot of people have enjoyed, and I'm glad to hear that. Coming up, I've mentioned before, we have the CEO of iDevices, Chris Allen. I met Chris at IoT World and really liked what he had to say about his company's entry into this space. iDevices makes, well, they used to make the iGrill, which they sold off to Weber, and now they make HomeKit devices. And Chris has a really amazing special offer. Actually, it's a giveaway. Ooh. For people who listen to the show. So you won't want to miss this. Ooh. One.
Everyone likes a good giveaway. All right. Well, you can find Home On and Entertainment 2.0. If you're not already a subscriber, go and subscribe to them. Go to iTunes, go to Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. We're pretty much everywhere. And if you like the shows, and maybe you're already a subscriber, the best way you can help us out is to go over to iTunes. Even if you're not using iTunes, it's the place to go. Go to iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It helps us out a lot, and we really, really appreciate it. And then, if you want to interact with us in real time, come back and listen to the show while we're recording it. There's a chat room. It's a lot of fun. We get feedback from you guys while we're doing it. You can correct us on show cast names that we can't remember and fun tips like that. And you can do that typically Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's not always that day and time, though, so follow us on Twitter, and you'll know for sure when the show is going to be recorded live. That's going to do it for episode 377. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 378. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.